Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Kurt Schirato from Bismarck, North Dakota. Kurt, we had him on last year about this time. Kurt's a, you know, he cut his teeth on the Missouri River. This guy's been fishing for decades on the Missouri River year-round, but especially in the spring. Right now, this thing is about to pop off. As soon as this weather gets a little bit nicer, we're definitely going to see the spring rush on the river here in Bismarck and in this part of North Dakota. A great destination fishery for trophy fish opportunities. And it's also one of the best opportunities to just go out and collect some fish for the first fish fry of the open water season. That being said, we cover the whole gamut. And I love having Kurt on. You know, we had him on last year kind of for the first time, and just fun to get to know him and get to know his experience. Just so much experience growing up. You know, his passion for fishing really started on the Missouri River. And you know, every juncture of his career, at every skill level he's ever been, the beginning, the middle, and now, he's just a top shelf guy. He's been having these conversations on an adult level, answering these same questions every spring his whole life. It's very refined information. Some of it sounds a little bit simple. Some of it sounds maybe easy to realize. But that being said, Kurt has been there and done it under almost every condition the spring, the Missouri River could be in the spring. And so it's fun to talk about the current conditions that we're in right now with a lot less runoff, a little bit less current on the river, and so just some, you know, cold clear water kind of stuff, or clearer water, and just what all that stuff does to the fish. And Kurt's got some great recommendations and great opinions, again formulated over decades of fishing on the Missouri River here. And Kurt's just a great guy. It's just fun. I feel like he's the kind of guy I just want to talk to every year, even if it's the same conversation. I just really enjoy having the conversation with somebody like Kurt. He's very, very positive, very upbeat, great attitude, and a great guy and a great angler. So that's it. Missouri River walleyes in the spring with Kurt Schirato. Let's do it. This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. This episode is brought to you by Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Confidence in things. But right now, looking at, the way it is right now, we're kind of having this little cold snap right now. But the river has been open. There are some guys, I'm not, throwing anybody under the bus or exposing anything that anybody don't know yet, but some fish are being caught already. It's kind of early, it's not too early. It's not like the 1st of January or something like that where we're in the Guinness Book of World Records, but it is one of those years where it's a little earlier and people can, if you're hardcore, you can get your boat out on the water. If you were going to go out, what would be some of the things that you're thinking of right away as far as like getting prepared for the elements, the fish patterns? Where would you be trying to find fish right away? Just talking about, kind of the fish migration. What does a year like this do for that? We don't have a heavy flow. We don't have a big runoff. Like, what does that stuff all mean, man? What would be the things that you're thinking about right now this year?
Well, you threw a couple good pointers in there. Right now, I think, last year we had such a horrible winter, a lot of snow, a lot of flow, and I think it made it a little tougher out here. I think the water was muddy for a lot of our spring. It made for, to me, a tougher than normal bite. I know a couple good tournaments. We had some monster fish, monster weights, but I think overall in general, that may have been part of our holdback last year. This year, on the other end, you know, it's looking better. We don't have a lot of snow. We should have cleaner water, shouldn't be a lot of flow coming down to mess things up. I think with any body of water, the more consistent things are, the better the fishing. I mean, river, lake, reservoir, to me, it doesn't matter. So hopefully that's a good start for this year. Now, you fire it in the early thing. Yeah, you get that ice out. People are jumping out there as soon as they can. First thing I'm going to throw at anybody, you go out this time of the year, you got to be safe. You got to take your time. There's still ice chunks flowing. The river's changing. You know, you got to be careful, number one. You know, maybe stay closer to the ramp. Don't do these long runs up and down the river. So safety, number one. Number two, I guess the way I look at things this time of year, you're going out early, and I hear the same story because I'm not that guy anymore. Years ago, I wanted to be the first guy out there. Obviously, with my age, I've just kind of let that go, and I see all the other guys doing the same thing I used to. But I'm still hearing the same stories. Usually, springtime, when I say spring, that's now. You know, the first chance we get at the Missouri River, and that's an awesome thing because many guys around the country, you know, in the upper Midwest, they don't have this opportunity. They got to wait for, number one, season to open, or number two, their small lake to open up, which Missouri River, heck, I think can stay open year-round on a good year. But, again, I'm hearing the same stories. Guys go out, they'll find a nice pot of fish, they'll catch some good ones, they'll go back the next day, try and do the same thing, not so good. And I've heard it from a couple of my friends doing that already this year, these little breaks we've had in between the cold snaps. One day is good, the next day is not so good. And I think that's pretty typical. There are always strange years where just, you know, where did the fish come from? Where did the fish go? It's so hard to tell. But so far, I think pretty typical for early ice out. And I think things are going to get better as things go. Obviously, the water keeps moving. It keeps thawing, gets warmer, and all that other good stuff. I think we're going to be right on track this year.
You know, under these conditions, what do you see the fish do? You know, is there ever like a yo-yo effect where we've had this warm weather recently that kind of opened up the river? Now we're cold again. Do you feel like that just stalls the fish out, or do they keep moving once they've gotten moving? Like building that picture of like, how does a guy go out and find fish every day? How do you try to map that out in your brain to sort of, you know, decide what boat ramp to put in at and what stretch of the river to be looking in?
Again, you definitely touched on a few good points there. And a couple things that I guess I've experienced over the year. Number one, I think we mentioned in our last talk too that I guess I've seen this over the years. I still believe it. I mean, right now we just cleared off the ice. Wherever we can get a boat in, people are going to go. And you're going to find out real fast if the fish are, let's just say, in Bismarck. Are they down towards the Rifle Range? Are they down towards Hazleton? Are they up in Wilton? I've seen every spring open up, and I've seen every situation, every boat ramp I just listed, fish have migrated and been at one of those locations right at ice out. Over the years, that's not typical, but I've seen it happen. I've seen ice out, and you can fish out a Fox Island boat ramp and never have to leave again. I've seen years where fish have never even made it up to Fox Island compared to go 20 miles south of Bismarck and you could load up on numbers of fish. So again, no consistency, I don't think, in the migration type thing. I think we got to find out. I think we just got to go out and go. If I go out of, let's say, a boat ramp in, let's say, Hazleton, and I don't do well, I'm going to probably move way up to Bismarck and try that the next day I got a chance to. We just got to find where the fish are in their movement right here. Now, last fall, I have never seen a fall like last fall in my entire life. Now, I've seen springs good, but last fall was ridiculously good, you know, from Bismarck all the way south, Rifle Range, Hazleton. I mean, it was easy to go out and catch 50, 75. We had 100 fish days last fall, and I'm talking October and November. It was late. Numbers were good. Size of the fish were great. You know, there wasn't a ton of big fish, but, you know, 15 to 20 inch fish were plentiful. So what I saw last fall, I was thinking, I mean, this was up into December. We had great numbers here in December still. So I'm really curious to see what the next, you know, either my own or friends' reports over the next, you know, 2-3 weeks are going to be, because it's either going to be loaded out here or it's going to be another typical spring and you're going to have to go find pods of fish. Now, a lot of times I've seen when the bite is kind of tough, I add ice out. A lot of guys, you know, well, we all know there's public holes on rivers, public areas on lakes and stuff. But unfortunately, some of those public holes are some of the best places those fish are holding up. And you may have to go share that spot with one or two or 20 other boats if you choose to do that. If you don't like to do that, you might have to burn a tank of gas looking for fish and not finding many, because sometimes they're just pods of them there. And it's only going to be a matter of a week or two before they really start spreading out. Now you're going to find them all over the place. But a lot of times at early ice out, you might have to check those community holes and just work around them, work the edges of them, and, you know, kind of take your turn in there to catch a limit of fish or a handful, whatever you want to go out to do.
I think that's a strong point. You know, I mean, for a lot of people, that's going to be sort of the, you know, plan A, at least for the first time out, is like some sort of a memory. Fish some sort of a memory, you know, somewhere that you had success on a spring, you know, a spring day in the past, and just see what happens. And, you know, it's amazing, you know, some of those spots, they just, you know, they set up well, whether they're resident fish or whatever. And it can be a good way to just, you know, get bit for the first time, for sure.
Exactly. And a lot of those community holes, I'll call them, they all have to do with the flow of the river. The way the river bends always makes good spots, you know, inside or outside those bends. Those areas are there year after year. Now, sometimes up and down the river, when they start building homes and putting in other riprap, well, that changes things. But there's still those standard spots that you might want to go check out first. And the guys that go out right away, that's normally where they go anyway. They're not going to find the little nitpick, you know, behind the sandbar, tiny little spots. They're going to their usuals, their go-tos over all the years. That's where they go to first. And like I said, when you start, you know, battling more boats, things warm up, those fish spread out. Now you can go try all these other areas. And that's what I like to do. But trust me, I've had many a days in spots where there's multiple boats. It's not my favorite way of doing it, but if I want to get bit, that's what I had to do. So it's only a matter of time till you can kind of skirt out of there and go do your own thing.
You know, if somebody was going to go out, you know, say in the next, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, you know, what would be the easiest strategy in your mind, in your experience, for somebody to just go out and catch a limit of walleyes?
Well, first and foremost, most of the guys I talk to about, there's still many people that are intimidated by the river. Number one, you have current to mess with. You have rocks, you have trees, you have ever-changing flow of the water causing sandbars to shift. So navigating can always be an issue, and rightfully so. I mean, it's one of those things you have to be confident with what you're doing. Take your time and just navigate slow till you get to places. So there are a lot of people that are real unsure and insecure about those kind of things. So I guess my biggest advice would be, if you're, you know, in and around the Missouri River, around the Bismarck area, or coming from whatever, Eastern North Dakota, Minnesota, wherever you want to travel to or come from, you know, Hazleton, that area down there, you're messing with a lot less current down there, number one. So boat control can be handled a lot easier. I guess in my mind, you're already looking at more of lake characteristics or the reservoir characteristics down there, because the water isn't cruising like it is up here in Bismarck or Wilton or Washburn or something like that. So, you know, you get a little further south, you got one less element to deal with, and that's current. And there's plenty of deeper areas that are very close to boat ramps down there. Some of the best spots are within right out in front of boat ramps or just 2-3 miles north or south of boat ramps. So navigation's usually pretty good. And fishing, typically, if it's good up here, it's probably good down there. So that is always a safe bet to get started. And in my opinion, I mean, jigging techniques, you just can't beat it in the early time of year. Whether you're going to, I guess I'm going to start with a live bait. I'm a minnow guy up front. And if not, I'm going to go to a plastic. But if I got one of my partners that wants to throw a plastic, I'll throw a minnow and I'll let the fish dictate what they want. And any type of vertical jigging presentation down there in the deeper water is always great. And if you can't, or if you work out of that, or you're not seeing fish, you're not marking fish, you're not catching them, then you can work into the shallows and start looking to that, my favorite, pitching jigs into shallower water. So a little more difficult to do that. And obviously that takes a lot more, you know, practice to get good at it or to get successful at it. But jigs and minnows, jigs and plastics, any of that stuff is a great way to start the season. I would say 90% of the guys going out right now, that's what they're going to start with. You will have some guys doing some, pulling some crankbait type things. And you know, it's going to be a wide open game. My favorite thing isn't necessarily that guy's favorite. So keep an open mind, but, jigs are just it's just a go-to thing early season.
Do you have any like cold water philosophies? You know, I mean, you know, factoring in the time of year, you know, just sort of the stage that the fish are, people have sort of philosophies when they're fishing cold, clearer water, you know, mono versus fluorocarbon leaders in that. I like that part of the conversation. I think a lot of other people do too. Sometimes people want to be validated by what your opinion is, but I think there's a lot of learning that can go on too, because, you know, a lot of people, they just have a couple of rods, you know, set up, and they're set up the same all the time. All your, you know, like people don't, you know, sort of pay attention to that, but man, it you know, I've definitely learned, I need to ask people this question, because it can produce fish in certain situations. Do you have anything like that for like this spring, like really cold, clear water, we'll call it?
Well, I do, but I'm probably going to get downplayed, because the longer I talk about it, and I guess I've done talks and seminars on jigs for, I think Jason and I have been talking for over 20 years about the Missouri River. And jig fishing is a big part of my life. Whether I'm on any lake, river, or reservoir, I just feel it's such a good presentation. There's so many variables. You got sizes, you got colors, you got different shapes, you got plastics, you got live bait, you got, you know, you got worms, you got crawlers, you got leeches. It's like jigs are jigs, and they are just, they're a killer technique. So getting good at it, taking time to do it is crazy. I'm going to get shut down with a lot of conversation, because even to this day, I'm going to say 90% of my presentation is still with monofilament line. And everybody in the world right now is talking about braided line with fluorocarbon leaders and this and that. And I'm not that guy yet, because I haven't been convinced that that is a better method. Now, in different situations, you know, deeper water, that type of thing, I'll have fire line on. I'll keep a rod ready with it, because, you know, deeper water up at the lake and stuff like that, in the fall and stuff, I use on the river, you're not going to see me with braided line very often. And I feel monofilament is way more natural. I still use a high-vis line on mine, either a green or an orange. I'll either use Berkeley Sensation in the orange, and I'll use, you know, a high vis green, usually in a 6 pound. That's what I like. Again, I just feel monofilament gives a lot better flow. I am not afraid of the color. I'm not afraid of the orange or the green spooking my fish. that is just my two cents on it. Again, if I'm going to be maybe down at Hazleton in the spring on the river, and some of that water might go 15, 20, 25 feet, you know, a braided line might be great. And a lot of guys will love it for vertical jigging presentation. You know, I that situation, I'm totally okay. I would go that route. But I've had a lot of conversation, and a situation that happened to me just this last spring. We were fishing jigs, shallow, probably 2 to 6 feet, three of us in the boat, two of us using, I know what I was using. Again, I was using a orange 6-pound monofilament. My other partner was using the same thing. I don't know which color, but the third guy was using Fireline in a light. I don't remember what size it was. Long story made short is we were pitching into a school of fish and just, it was on fire. I mean, we had 14 fish in the boat between two of us, and the third guy could not get bit. Not at all. And he just, we couldn't figure out the story. No idea. He was changing jig color. He was trying all this, all that. He flipped rods and got rid of his fire line that day, switched to monofilament, pitched in, and within no time he had two fish. I mean, he caught the next fish, just switching that fast. So was it a terribly bad coincidence or something? Was something going on the way he was moving his bait? Was the braided line too erratic compared to monofilament? I don't know. I just know what I saw that particular day.
Yeah.
Now, I could tell you 100 other stories that go the other way too. So it's just those situations. And I hear stories from other fishermen that it's like, yep, that happened to me. Or, no, I'm glad I heard that because I've never thought of that. So it's just what works for me and what works for you. You got to go with what you're comfortable with. Don't downsize your jigs if you're not feeling bottom. You got to be comfortable with what's going. Don't let people talk you into smaller is lighter is better until they prove it. I mean, the next day a 3/4 ounce jig might be great, you know, and the next day a 1/4 ounce might be good, or a 3/16 or an 1/8, you know. You just got to go with what's comfortable and try and figure out what those fish want. Do they want plastic? Do they want live bait? Do they want this color? Do they want that color? I have my own preferences. I pour my own jigs and color them, and I have about 4 of my favorite colors that I use. And 99% of the time, I'm there. I don't step outside those boundaries unless somebody in the boat is really outdoing me. Then I got to figure out what's going on. Is it really the color, or is it my line, or is it my cadence of fishing?
Yeah.
There's so many variables, and it's such a hot topic to talk about, but I pay attention to every one of my fishing partners in the boat, especially if I'm not catching fish and they are. Because if I am, well, I don't have nothing to worry about. But if I'm not, it's like, why is this not happening? Is it my line? Is it my jig? Is it my style? You know, so you really got to pay attention. And to me, that's fun. That's fun to learn about and to analyze. It's always a new game out there. Every day, it's something different. All just, you know, experiences. I mean, there are so many situations where braided line it outshines monofilament with jigs. I mean, if you're in structure, if you want to be ripping jigs, if you're getting those fish to a reaction bite, you know, with ripping a plastic by weeds, through weeds, around weeds, those fish are coming out and just hitting off reaction. Yeah, I definitely want a braided line in there. But if I'm kind of soft-spoken and pitching to fish in, you know, small rocks or gravel or sand, the river's full of sand, so that's where I'm at. And I'm in shallow. When I'm on the river, I don't care. As soon as this ice is out, I'm going to try shallow water. I'm going to try, you know, realistically, I'm still going to pitch up into 2-3 feet of water, but I'm thinking those fish are going to be more in probably 6 to 8 feet of water right now. If I'm pitching in that shallow, they're going to be there or in some of these deeper holes. I mean, you might find the 10, 12, 15, 18 foot stuff, you know, depending how far north or south you are on the river. I mean, there's not a ton of holes up here that I would fish that are, you know, 20 feet deep. But down at Hazleton, you'll find some of that deeper water. So every situation is different. You know, you can't take to the bank that I got one rod with one type of line and be done with it. You just have to have multiple weapons out there. And with, in my opinion, with multiple styles of line and rods and jigs and everything. So
yeah, and the rod thing plays into that. You know, like when you're rigging your rods, do you like, you know, for jig fishing specifically, you know, spring, you know, everything we're talking about right now, do you pay attention to your rod, you know, size, length, power, you know, that whole thing, you know, the reel size, or the spool size, like that sort of thing? Like, are there some fine tuning things there that you sort of play around with maybe, you know, as it pertains to the line selection? Because, you know, everything you're talking about, you know, mono being what it is in comparison to a super line, it greatly affects the action. If everything else stays the same, if everything else, your cadence, the rod action, if everything stays the exact same, the fish are seeing two totally different things for what we're talking about.
You're 100% right. And I've grown, I guess, comfortable with some things. Again, it's my opinion, but based on that, yeah, you know, I had a great conversation with Tom Wynn this winter at a show. And if you'd compare what he does in a jig, I'd have had to sell everything I own and start over. And that guy is amazing, you know. So he had my brain thinking over and over and over, because what he uses, I don't use. But that guy is phenomenal at what he's doing right now. And he's teaching us a whole new thing that a lot of us are just, you know, getting started with. But where I'm at, where we're at, and we're fishing the Missouri River, been doing it for years. And I guess where I've fallen into place with that, shorter rods don't cast as well. I like to cast. So I'm looking into, you know, if I'm going to try and predict one size rod for somebody, you know, a 6.5 foot rod would probably be my go-to if I had to pick one rod to kind of do it all. I like them a little bit longer, like 6'8", 6'9", 6'10". There's a lot of them out there in that length. I get a better cast with it. You know, I can cast a little bit longer, farther. Not that I have to go that far, but it just helps because I kind of pitch my jigs, a lot of them underhand. I don't fling them overhanded real hard, so it helps with distance a little bit. And it also helps once you do pitch out that far, if you're, you know, 25, 30 feet out on a pitch and you do get a bite, you have a little leverage in your rod to set the hook. And, you know, again, I got mono on. So when I get a bite that far out, I set the hook hard. I love doing that. I don't think anybody can tell you they don't like feeling that bite, you know, and winding up and setting the hook. That's the most exciting part of it all. But so this is 6'9", 6'10" foot rod somewhere in there is good for me. If I'm sticking with medium light jigs, let's say 3/16, quarters, maybe 5/16 up to a 3/8, we'll call it. You know, you can get away with that length in a medium light with, let's say, a fast or extra fast tip. I guess those are my favorite styles of rod. Now, every model make a rod. You could take six makers that it's a 6'10", medium light with a fast tip, and everyone is going to feel different to you because every manufacturer has their own idea of a 6'9", medium light, fast tip.
Devil's Lake, North Dakota is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. We talk about the fishing all the time on this show, but to find out what the lake and the community has to offer, which is way more than we ever talk about on this show, you can head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. Also, our favorite, the fishing tab. It's going to give you real-time fishing reports, directions to fish cleaning stations and boat landings and shore fishing piers, which are awesome, by the way. Also, it's going to give you a list of options for boat rentals or guide services and bait shops. Everything that you need to plan your next adventure in Devil's Lake is at devilslakend.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. That's a good point. I probably don't, you know, lean on that point nearly enough on this show, because I ask everybody, you know, preference in rod, you know, in all these different scenarios. You know, I think Jason is probably, you know, he's been in the rod business for a long time, but that's a great point to make, that you got all those rods. The only thing that would be the same is the length, right? If they say it's 6'10", it ought to be 6'10". But yeah, rod power, there's no standard across the industry for that. So that's a very, I think that's a very, very good point. It's a disclaimer. That way, if somebody goes and maybe they don't have the same opinion as you, you know, like the specific brand kind of has a lot to do with it.
And I have a lot of the same brands, will Nate say, but they're different models. And let's say they're all 6'10s, they all feel different to me. But they're the same maker, but they're just different models of their rods. Now you're going to talk some of your higher end rods to your middle, you know, to lower end rods, they're all going to feel different. I'm not going to lie. If you got the money, spend a jigging rod, spend the most on a jigging rod, but you do not need to. I'm not going to push high end rods on anybody. If you're comfortable, you know, with some of these rods, you can buy a decent rod for 80 to 150 bucks, 200 bucks. Well, now they're getting 300-400 and above that right now. Oh, so yeah. I'm not going to tell you to go buy high end, because are they better? Yes. Are they more sensitive? Yes. Are they lighter? Yes. Do they feel better in your hand for 10 hours in a day? Yes. But are they necessary? Not really. I think you can do good with some good middle priced rods and be 100% confident with the guy next to you that has, you know, double the price in your rod. You got to find those rods that are comfortable for you, that you like, and that you're used to, you know. There's a lot of good manufacturers out there and a lot of good product, but you just got to find what works for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely a part of it. You know, especially talking jig fishing, you know, I mean, just you know, the clear water, you know, the jig pitching, you know, I think it's a great point you made, you know, where especially a jig and a minnow, like where you started, you know, if you start with a jig and a minnow, having that underhand toss, you know, you're going to cast off way less minnows, you know. There's a true efficiency to that, like what Absolutely. You said there, that's not like you just deciding that you like to cast underhand. I mean, there's a true efficiency to that, especially when live bait's involved. I think that's, you know, I just like the way you described that. It paints such a true picture. I think that's all good stuff. I think those are meaningful. I think, you know, I've definitely had some great conversations, even just with my own friends, and had that experience with myself where, you know, I'm willing to, and it's fun. We're talking fishing. You get to play tackle. It's okay to overthink and take fishing seriously sometimes. And that, you know, your jig setup in comparison to, you know, trolling setups or, you know, casting, it is something, you know, a different time of year, whatever it is. I feel like that, you know, that jig, that kind of finessey, you know, setup that you're going to fish in the spring when the water's cold and the bites can be subtle or whatever it is, like, you know, things get kind of specific, you know, to take you from a good day to a great day. These are some of the things that can help you, you know?
Yeah. And so, and you're, you definitely got to play the game. I mean, I'm going to go out in this cold weather. I'm going to pitch a minnow. Promise you. First day, I'm going to. Until my buddy next to me outfishes me with a plastic. But you are going to have guys go out with plastics day one and catch fish and do good. And I got no problem. You just got to figure out what the fish want that day and what you're out to do. There are some days we've gone out and just maybe pitched plastics all day, changed them up just to see what was going on. But we play the game back and forth as far as what they like. You got to let the fish dictate what they're really after today and tomorrow. And my go-to is going to be a minnow right now on the Missouri River. I'm going to try some shallow water. I'm going to look behind the sandbars, try and find that slack current. I'm going to check some of the community holes out. I want to definitely go to them unless they're inundated with other boats. Then I'm going to, you know, try and look elsewhere. But you got to go out. For me, fishing hard is fun. Whatever, you know, makes the best of your day. If you want to just go out and get away for a while, if you want to go out and catch 100 fish, you want to go catch 5 for your family, whatever it is, go out, you know, do the best, play hard, have fun, be safe. And, you know, kind of, you know, listening to these conversations and the people talk and read magazines and go to seminars, to me, that's all fun. It's all enjoyable. If I get one tactic out of every conversation or every article, I'm money ahead.
You know, there's no replacement for time on the water. I think that's true. That all this consumption, all this media, you know, all this stuff we have access to, it doesn't replace time on the water whatsoever.
None.
It adds, you know, it just sort of adds to the pile. And you can take nuggets from it if you're open-minded and you're willing to, you know, kind of take it all in and interpret it for yourself and figure out ways to benefit from it. I think that's what, you know, the best guys, the best anglers are going to do, you know, with the media consumption and stuff like that. But none of it replaces a fishing opportunity and getting out there and actually doing it, the things that you just learn with that. Well, for a closer, this, you know, you started talking about, you know, getting back to the river, getting back to the fish on the river. You know, this is probably like tough and impossible to even answer particularly, but I think it's worth just getting, you know, maybe seeing what your opinion is. But you talk about like last fall, you know, looking at that last fall, looking back your whole life, you know, growing up here and experiencing fishing on the river year round, do you ever see any trends like that? Do you see any ebbs and flows that have any sort of consistency or that give you any sort of inkling or an idea or help you with any type of expectation from one season to the next? Like you having a good fall last fall as far as fish catches and the amount of fish that hung around in the system, does that give you any sort of like confidence that, you know, that this spring is going to be good as well? Or is that just, you know, I mean, you know, how does that affect you?
Well, as you were speaking of that, I was just trying to think through this. If you want my honest answer, my honest answer is over the years, based on everything I've experienced in the last whatever 40 years of my life, whatever it happens to be on the river, I have no idea what the spring is going to be like based on how good last fall was. I've seen it so opposite and so good. I'm anticipating very good because everything is lining up based on fall was fantastic. Winter, fantastic. The fish down south of us in Oahe, fantastic. Everything is lining up to have, you know, a great spring on the Missouri River up in and around Bismarck, Wilton, Wash, you know, all the way up and down. I think it should be a fantastic spring. But boy, about the time I open my mouth, something's going to turn around and it's just going to be totally opposite because every year I think I got it figured out. Mother Nature just proves me wrong. So it is lining up to be good. Honestly, I don't have a clue, but we are going to have fun trying to figure it out.
That's it right there. At the end of the day, this is true with every day of fishing, right? We got to go out and we got to find them. And the people that can erase yesterday and just go out and fish the day are gonna be at the tip of the spear. They're gonna find the best bites.
Yes, for sure.
Definitely, you know, we're not gonna have a conversation where we don't include a little bit of community whole conversation, because that's important too. That's a big part of fishing. And you know what? If you have too much pride to fish in a community whole, well, then I guess you're just gonna have some tough days, and that's cool. And that's totally cool.
You gotta be courteous. Some of my favorite stories as I was growing up on the river were fishing by people I got to know just through fishing in community holes. Those early Saturday mornings, you'd be there and you'd be giving each other guff from boat to boat as you're drifting down, you know, the river together and doing things. I mean, I have great memories of that. Like I said, it's not my favorite thing to do all the time, but golly, if I have to look back over all the years, there's a lot of community holes that have put a lot of numbers, big fish, you name it. They're there for a reason. Those fish are there. So don't be a stranger to them. Be polite to the other people around you and, enjoy the day.
I'm glad we were able to do this again. I knew after we talked last year, I was like, I can't wait to get Kurt back on. And we're definitely going to have we got to do one of these on the big lake. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
If you ever get something cool going on up there, and I would just love to. I know you spend a lot of time up there. We were talking before this that you spend some time up. You got a property up there. I love it. And that's kind of my obsession as well, as Sakakawea. But you know what? It's spring. It's time to talk about the river. It's gonna be popping off here soon. I'm sure as soon as this cold weather that we're sitting in right now, as soon as that allows people to get on, their boats in the water safely again. I'm sure the boat ramps get icy when it's like this, but if you can get your boat in as soon as that happens, I mean, it's that time of year, so it's fun to talk about. It's fun to talk about the past and just things you've learned, the philosophies that you've sort of developed over the years with your years of experience, and but also, what you think is going to go on this year. I think that's all great stuff. A lot of people are talking about that. Everybody's got their own opinions on that, and it's fun. We won't know if any of it has any validity until it happens. That's always true, but a great, great stuff, man. Great conversation. I always like the recommendations, and we'll definitely be in touch, but I would say this, let's sign it off, man. Anything else that pops into your head to hit it? Otherwise, if people ever have questions, I don't know if you do, if you got a spot, an email, your social medias or anything, content you want to promote?
Yeah. Just normal stuff on Messenger, just touch base that way, wherever you're at. If we're friends on Facebook, either way, I'm open for any of it. Anybody not from the area that wants to come down this way, from the east or something, shoot me a message. I can fill you in with the best information I can give. I can't guarantee things, but we just know if the water's clear, if the fish are biting, should I go north, should I go south? I can try and help out with that. And anything else, yeah, I'm pretty open with all that. Nowadays you can contact anybody, and I'm out there. You can find it. Feel free to touch base.
There it is, man. There it is. That's a wrap, Kurt.